2020 was a year where many things, most things, were different. Hard to plan for almost anything because you never knew what was going to happen, what was going to be the rules from our government, what was going to happen with church, how your work was going to respond to it. Just a very unsettling time. And for those who like to, you know, kind of lay out plans and work a plan and do things, it was certainly a harder time because things constantly changed. Things that were out of our control continued to change. I'm not sure if as you get older you like to plan more, but I think as you get older sometimes you see the necessity to have some kind of a plan rather than just be spontaneous. I know even when I was young, I probably wasn't really spontaneous, but I'm sure Connie will tell you I was more spontaneous than I was as I got older. And we do that because we want to try to control the uncertainties in life. Uncertainties are things that generally just make life harder. And how we deal with those is also something that as Christians we have to give some thought to and do it in the right way as well. And the Bible is filled with stories of people who faced uncertainties, didn't really know what they were going to do next. Some of them, of course, give an example of turning to God and looking to Him for direction. And some of them show the opposite, trying to solve the problems on their own without God and not being as successful. But I think one of the common elements of those stories that we see is that in one way or another, they all, when they faced those uncertainties, they had to deal with a certain emotion. And it's a emotion that we also have to deal with when we face uncertainty, and we will continue to deal with it. And I think this year has brought out how powerful that emotion can be in people's lives, how motivating it can be and controlling, and certainly limiting to some degree people in their interactions with when they were faced with the uncertainties around this, the disease that's going around and how to deal with that. That emotion, and will be the focus of this sermon, is fear. I see and have seen fear in the lives as a motivator or something that people are reacting to, certainly in my family, making decisions that in general weren't based necessarily on fact but on fear. And to some degree, both our government and our news media worked to generate fear if you were susceptible to that. That it was how they, in many ways, what they tried to do to get people to do what they wanted them to do. And fear is never a good basis for a reason why we do something. But you can certainly see that there are stories in the Bible where people had fear and responded to fear in one way or another. When you think of those, Peter denying Christ was because of fear. Christ is going to eliminate fear when he returns, and there are scriptures that say that. When you think of in the Old Testament, Saul, the king, Saul, was afraid to tell the people no, and so he let them do things that he had specifically been told not to have them do, and eventually cost him his kingship, his position, and that it would continue, that kingly line would continue through him. So it was a major thing when you think that God's plan was for Christ to come from the line of kings of Israel, which would have, if Saul had been righteous and hadn't responded in fear, that would have meant that eventually Christ came through his line rather than David's. Which is, when you think of what fear did in one person's life and how it changed their life and the life of the whole history of that went beyond past them, it was a major influence and a major problem. Israel let fear prevent them from stepping into the promised land. There are giants there. We're afraid of those giants and the people and everything. Peter walked on water until fear disrupted his faith. Moses was at the Red Sea. The Israelites were fearful. Moses was not. Moses said, "Stand and watch and see the glory of God." But Israel was afraid. All of us have to deal with fear, one way or another. It may not be overpowering, but it's fear if we allow it to. We certainly all have that emotion, and how we deal with it is important. What are you doing to deal with fear? Are you succeeding? Or other times you can see in your life where you really gave in to fear? And I'll say in general, when you've done that, you can also see that it didn't turn out as well as it should have, if that was the reason why. Now, I'm not talking about caution. Caution is a good thing. Caution and fear aren't the same thing. God tells us we should be cautious. The Bible is full of tales of being cautious about things. And some of the things that are related to how everyone deals with the virus isn't fear. It is caution. But fear is much more powerful, much stronger. And that's what we're really talking about today. We're going to look at what the Bible has to say about fear, or some of the things at least, because I want all of us to understand the differences. I want us to recognize the changes that we have to make if we see that there are ways that we're letting fear govern our lives, and be able to step forward in a more positive and a more active and a way that will lead more likely to success than if we are allowing fear to be what governs us. All fear is not bad. Someone who says, "I'm not afraid of anything," is foolish. Really, there are certainly things to be afraid of, to be cautious toward. But I think when you talk about what the Bible has to say about fear as a large overriding emotion, it talks about fear in relation to two different ways. The Bible talks about the fear of God, fear toward God, and the Bible talks about the fear of man or events that were created by men. And so we're going to look primarily at those two, view this subject through those two aspects, and move forward. So we're going to begin by looking at the type of fear that is a fear of or toward God. And I think we've all had exposure to how that term is used in relation to God in the Bible, but I do want to cover it and make sure everyone is clear on that. The way that the word fear is used in the English language now is changed from when the King James Bible was written. At that time, there were shades or variety of how it was used. Now it's become, again, much more of a just stark, strong emotion is the way that we use fear in now. And so when you read in the Bible about having a fear for God, if you don't understand the differences in the words, the differences in the usage, it leads you down the wrong path. You know, God does not expect us to have an irrational terror towards him, which is really what fear is. But he does expect us to have an emotion that's related to that, or was related to that at the time the Bible was written. The fear as it's used in the Bible directed towards God is much more of respect or awe, right? Respect for God. When you read "fear the Lord," fear anything related to God, it does mean that God wants us and expects us to have respect or awe. Two emotions, but positive emotions, not negative emotions. And that certainly changes the meaning. One of the closest words, one of the best substitutions, if you see "fear the Lord," is to use the word revere. Revere the Lord. Close in sound, but it changes that. Again, it's a reverence toward God, an awe, a respect, recognizing the position God is in above us, that he exceeds us. So let's look at a few scriptures where this fear is described in the Bible. The first one is in Proverbs chapter 1. And we'll we'll read that verse. The fear of the Lord, or let's substitute our word, the reverence for the Lord, is the beginning of knowledge. Fools both despise wisdom and instruction. Reverence for God, understanding that true knowledge comes from God, is where it begins, where we can begin to really acquire knowledge that matters, is by recognizing that that true knowledge comes from the one who created everything. The beginning of wisdom. Now we'll turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10. And we'll begin in verse 12. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? But to fear, to revere the Lord your God. And how do you do that? How do you revere the Lord your God? To walk in all of his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today for your good. What does God require of you? He requires that you have reverence toward him. And then these verses explain some of the ways that we do that. Similar to that first point from the sermon last week. The first resolution, fear God and love God, resolve that you're going to love God and you're going to serve him. The way God's Spirit is working in our lives has a great deal to do with which type of fear is the most active. And I think as we go through this, we should be doing a comparison. Is this fear or reverence, is this dominating my life, or is the other fear that we're going to get into later dominating? Which one has most control, and where do they have control in my life? And one of them we want to build up, and one of them we want to crush, really, to be rid of. Turn now to Isaiah chapter 11. And we'll begin in verse 2. The way that we revere God is by using the tools that he gives us and helps us to do those. Isaiah 11, beginning in verse 2. One of those tools to have that reverence, to fear God in the right way, is through his Spirit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on Christ, rest on him. But then we see the qualities that Spirit can bring to us. Wisdom and understanding. Counsel and might. Knowledge and the proper reverence of the Lord. His delight, God's delight, is the reverence of the Lord. I think in this case it's talking about Christ. Christ's delight will be reverence to the Lord, and he will not judge by the sight of his eyes nor decide by the hearing of his ears. Even Christ had reverence for the Father. And as we know, he didn't think it robbery to be considered equal, and yet he revered the Father. So it's certainly something that, again, Christ, in another way that Christ has set an example for us of how we should reverence people. One of the things that we worry about is safety many times. How are we protected? Where are the dangers? We see, we're going in through prophecy right now. Mr. Schultz is going through prophecy in his sermon series right now, and we see things coming that are scary. Things that we know from the Bible that we're going to have to experience some part of them. And the human reasoning would lead you to doing things on your own, trying to establish your safety through things you can do. Maybe you're stockpiling food and you're making sure you've got a cabinet full of weapons so you can defend yourself and things like that. And there may be a place for those things, but that isn't where our hope and our confidence in safety should come from. There's a level of caution that's involved in any kind of preparation that is good as long as we don't place all of our faith in those things. Turn to Proverbs chapter 14. And we'll begin in verse 26. Proverbs 14, beginning in verse 26. In the reverence of the Lord, there is strong confidence, and his children will have a place of refuge. Placing our reverence with God gives us a place of safety, a place of refuge that we can look to and we can count on, and a protection that we can know is ours. Verse 27, that fear, that reverence of the Lord is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares that lead to death. The church in past times spent a lot of time talking about the place of safety. Where is the place of safety? And there are biblical indications of some things, and there are also indications that might not be it. We'll be surprised, I think, when we find out how God does protect his people in the end time. But those are inconsequential where it happens. What we're just told in Proverbs is our place of safety, if you want to survive through these things that are going to come, that we're hearing about, the place of safety is God. He's the one that any refuge that we can count on will come from. He'll be the source, he'll be the strength, he'll be the protector. We may do some things that contribute to that, but nothing we can do will keep us safe. God will be the one that keeps us safe during those times. The story of David and Goliath is a story of someone showing proper reverence for God and that reverence wiping out fear. Completely removing fear. We know, I think everyone here is familiar with that story. David had a great love for God and his truth and his way of life. He had that from an early age, and God worked with him and did things in his life at an early age that strengthened that reverence for God, that trust that God would provide him safety, that he would keep him safe. Psalms and Proverbs are filled with David's stories, David's observations, and his reverence for God. And it seems like David, for the most part, never forgot that. Certainly he sinned. We know those sins as well. But it doesn't appear that David forgot them, where Solomon, it seems like, completely walked away from them for a while. David was the one who, immediately when some of his sins were pointed out, repented and turned back. He was blind at the time, but then when it was shown to him, he didn't waver from asking for forgiveness and recognizing that he had done something wrong. But in his confrontation with Goliath, we see a lot in that story about fear. Everyone else in the army of Israel was afraid of Goliath. Everyone else, from the king down to the mightiest warriors, no one would challenge Goliath. Goliath was mocking not just Israel, and that's another interesting part of that story, is most of the people there were just taking his mockery as, he's just saying things about the nation and about our God. And that where David was really offended, I don't know if that's exactly the right word, but he recognized that no one should be allowed to say the things Goliath was saying about God, and that it was a wrong thing to say. And that recognition motivated David. Everyone else saw Goliath's physical strength, and from what you read in the Bible, it was probably, he was formidable, huge. The weapons he used, the armor that he had, were things that normal men couldn't even wear or use. But David saw something differently because he didn't have the fear of man. He had a reverence for God that motivated the actions that he took, completely different than everyone else around him. And I think as you look at that story, one of the lessons that we should learn from that and the questions we should ask ourselves is, are there Goliaths in my life? Are there things that I just see as too powerful, too strong for me to ever be able to overcome? And of course, if there are things like that that we've given up on overcoming, or we don't see any way that we can overcome them, David's lesson, this lesson of reverence for God versus fear of a thing of man, is something that we can apply and should apply and help us conquer that problem. When we have a proper reverence for God, we see the world in a different light. Now, you may not see the angels gathered around you to protect you, like I think it was Elisha's servant, I think it was, where he was doubtful, and so God opened his eyes and actually allowed him to see all the angels that were around. But we know that God does have angels protecting us and watching over us, and God knows what's going on in our life. And remembering that we don't need to fear those things changes the way that we see the world. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 17. We'll read beginning in verse 45. 1 Samuel 17:45. I think this is one of the most complete reflections of reverence and love for God, driving away fears, that we can find in the Bible, and it's David's story, part of David's story. Beginning in verse 45, David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you've defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and all of the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all of this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Any Goliath that we face in our life can be conquered in the same way. With faith in God, with reverence toward God. And we find Christ certainly speaking to Satan in these same kind of terms. And David here recognizing that there should be a confidence that we can feel knowing that God is going to be with us. To have the ability to tell Satan to go away in the name of Jesus Christ, by the power of God, to leave you alone when you feel like you're being persecuted, when you feel like you're being troubled. So, that story is one that should help us when we battle fear and when we battle those Goliaths. Let's talk now about the fear of man. I guess there's ways that you could describe that. I've written down some of the things that came as I studied through this. You could say that the fear of God is a fear of what is. God is real. Respect for God then is a reaction to something that is real, that is tangible. The sermonette this morning in Kalamazoo talked about faith and how it's God is unseen. And that's certainly true. That's what the Bible says. But we know God is real. And the more we place our faith in God, the more he responds back. And we see him active in our lives. And then that it almost just builds on each other. That the more you put faith in God, God will respond back to that faith. And then it's easier for you to have faith the next time around. But God is genuine. God has made promises that are sure. The fear of man can be described as a fear of what is to come or what might be. Not of something definite, but of what might be. The fear of God recognizes that we're not alone, that God is with us and that he's far above and beyond us. The fear of man creates an illusion that we stand alone to face whatever's coming toward us. The fear of God, the reverence of God, comes from God, comes through his Spirit, is one of the qualities that comes to us through letting his Spirit work in us. The fear of man comes from Satan, and it's a tool to destroy us. I heard this a long time ago. When I think about fear, it comes to mind fairly often. It's an acronym. Fear, it makes fear an acronym for a phrase, for a saying. Fear is false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. Many times, if you can look at your life, when you have been afraid of something, it was because of a misconception, at least partially. False. Something that's false, whether it's some of those qualities that we just talked about, that you're alone, that you have to do it all yourself, that something might happen, it's false. And it's a tool that Satan uses to control mankind as well. And that's the thing that really makes me suspicious about the way that this epidemic was handled, is because fear was such a big part of how the world has been controlled. And it makes me believe that to some degree, at least, Satan is using this as for what he's trying to accomplish. And that it's not something God has, it isn't a punishment from God. We know what God's punishments will be. They're spelled out fairly clearly. And this doesn't really match one of those things. But we certainly see fear being used to control people. And that is from Satan. Let's talk about some of the qualities of this type of fear. Let's turn to Revelation 21. And we'll begin in verse 7. Revelation 21, beginning in verse 7. He who overcomes will inherit all things. And I will be his God, and he will be my son. But there are people who will not overcome. And that's what in verse 8 describes some of their qualities, some of their characteristics. The cowardly, the unbelieving, both of those fall in line with the descriptions of this fear of man that we've been talking about. The cowardly and the unbelieving, along with the abominable, the murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and liars, will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. God says that this improper fear, if we don't conquer it with the tools that he's given us, will eventually, if it's not conquered, lead to death, to the second death, or the lake of fire, I mean. So it's a strong emotion that we have to learn how to deal with properly. Again, because this type of fear is one of the primary tools of Satan. And if we allow ourselves to continue to be susceptible to it, then we continue to allow ourselves to be open to Satan working through that as well. And ultimately, our goal is that we don't have any cracks that Satan can use. that we close those up and seal them up. But that kind of fear, as it shows here, can prevent us from having a right relationship, the strong relationship with God that we need. Turn now to Proverbs chapter 29. And we'll read verse 25. Psalms 29, 25. The fear of man brings a snare. The fear of man, this kind of fear, is a trap. It's a snare. Whoever trusts in the Lord, whoever has reverence for God, will be safe. One fear traps you. One fear actually gives you freedom. Freedom that God promises, freedom that God gives us to live a life submitted to Him, but free from fear. Trust in God is what makes us safe and free. Now we'll look at Matthew chapter 10. And we'll read beginning in verse 28 there, Matthew chapter 10. Again, talking about fear versus reverence. Do not fear those who could kill your body. Even if we're faced with death, with physical death, someone's pointing a gun at your head, God says, don't be afraid of that. Don't let fear be what governs you if you're in that situation. Fear who can actually kill your soul, which really is Satan, is the source of those of that kind of thing. Do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will, but the very hairs on your head are numbered. Do not fear, therefore, for you are of more value than many sparrows. God always knows what's happening to us. God is always working his plan for you in the face of anything that comes your way. I think one of the things that develops as you know God's truth is that death doesn't mean the same thing to someone who knows God's truth as it does to many people in the world who see it as the finish or the end or something that will lead them to a very bad place. We know that God has us in his hands. We know that God has a plan for us. And there are times where we may die. All of us probably, well, we'll die at one point, but there are times where we may die unexpectedly. We may not die in the way that we would like our physical story to end. But knowing that it doesn't end there, knowing that God has much more planned for us, gives us a different perspective on that. Certainly should. Give us a different perspective on that. And Christ was saying, don't be afraid of men. Don't fear men. All they can do, and it seems like a big deal to us, but all they can do is take your physical life. If you reverence me, then you never have to worry about losing eternity. Fear of man versus reverence for God. How do we overcome this fear of man when it comes on us, when we experience it? Well, the first thing to do, of course, is to look to God. Replace that fear with your faith in God. Be aware that when it's taking hold, you change the story, you change the picture in your mind, you change your focus. You know, you know when that fear is coming on. You get that feeling in the pit of your stomach. You know, you start to get maybe nervous. Your body starts to react physically when you feel this kind of fear of man. We have indications of it. It's a matter of being able to recognize it and then turn to God. Because if you allow that kind of fear a foothold, it takes control. You know, and that can lead to very bad choices. It can lead to you doing damage to yourself, damage to others. Immediately, if you respond in certain ways, or damage to yourself and damage to others in the long term, because you allowed that fear to be what controlled you. And it can certainly then bleed over into other areas and cause more destruction. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. Think of a familiar scripture. I think we probably read it at the feast a lot, during different feast seasons maybe. 1 Peter 5 verse 8, be sober and be vigilant. And then again, those are ways that you combat this fear of man. Be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. And a lion uses fear to capture its prey. It uses that power, the power behind its roar, the power behind its charge, to freeze and certainly to allow it to get on top of you, the prey, before it can react. And I've heard that roar a few times in person, and it is amazing. If you haven't ever heard it, it's something you hear on TV doesn't do it justice. I think because you can't get the power behind it in the same way. And there, so Satan uses that fear, and the power that he wants you to believe is stronger than the power of God, to freeze us and to lock us into fear rather than looking to God and being able to overcome that. Satan roars at us. Walking to and fro, seeing who he can devour. That's what he does, he's doing right now. When he believes that he can get us, that he may have a chance of capturing us, he'll roar in one form or another. And if our reverence for God isn't strong, we will react to that fear in exactly the way that he wants us to react. Not look to God, not place our trust in God, but think that we have to protect ourselves because we're all we have. Another way that you can overcome this fear of man, and it may not seem as obvious, but is ask God for more love, more of his love, because that love is really the essence of his character, of who he is. And the more that we have the love of God within us, the more we respond to things in the way that God would respond to them. Not through fear. Turn to 1 John chapter 4. And we'll begin in verse 17. First John 4, beginning in verse 17. Love has been perfected, or is being, really is a better translation. Love is being perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Because as Christ is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. Because fear involves torment. He who fears has not been made perfect in love. And it's godly love, the love of God that we're talking about. And then it concludes in verse 19, we love Christ because he first loved us. He set that example. Another way that he set that example. There is no fear in love. Proper love for God, proper love for Christ. It overwhelms fear. is what we're told in this chapter right here. Love for God, reverence for God, is the strength that gives us the ability to overcome the things that Satan throws at us. And we overcome, again, by increasing our love. If the love of God overcomes fear, then the way to overcome fear is to ask God for more love. Let's look at one more scripture, 2 Timothy chapter 1. Second Timothy chapter 1, and we'll begin in verse 6. Therefore, I remind you, and Paul is reminding us at the same time, I remind you to stir up the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands, for God has not given us a spirit of fear. That spirit that is working in you, the spirit of God, is not a spirit of fear, but it is a spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. All three of those things don't come to a fearful person. Fear doesn't create a sound mind. Fear creates a destabilized mind. Fear doesn't give you power. Fear takes away the power that God promises is available to us. And fear doesn't create love. Fear really just gets you to focus on yourself. There's no love other than love for yourself, which isn't what we want to have. Forgets some of the fundamental principles that we've talked about. Power, love, and a sound mind. That's what reverence for God gives us. Those are the tools, some of the tools, to fight against the fear that Satan wants to create in us. Which fear will you choose? I think all of us know which fear we want to choose. That's pretty clear, pretty straightforward. But which will you choose? Because we'll walk out of here, and at some point in our life, in the coming days, weeks, months, we'll be faced with this possibility of fear thrown at us. Something will happen. Will we respond the way we've looked at here? Will we respond by letting that fear dominate our life, dominate our choices and our decisions? Or will we take that fear and turn it so that it produces in us that reverence for God? Our thoughts turn from the fear to God. Turn from ourselves and what might happen to us back to God, and reminding ourselves that God will take care of us, and God will provide for us, and God will strengthen and watch over us. And God's will is active in your life. Whatever happens in relation to that fear, God's will be there if we lay ourselves at his feet. If we say, I would need your will to be what I accept right now. How will we respond? What will control our lives? What will we let control our lives? The Bible gives us answers. God gives us promises. Promises that we can count on. Solomon figured it out at the end. At the end of all of his trials and experiments and doing the wrong things to try to understand the human condition, I guess. What did he say? The end of the matter is fear God, respect, reverence God, and keep his commandments. That's the whole duty of a man or a woman. Fear God, revere God, love God. If you do these things, there's no reason to fear any other thing.